Hey folks, this is Kevin. On this week's episode of Risk, you'll hear Jamie Mulligan.
It took a lot of therapy. Do you have any idea how many dresses I could have bought with 8 years of therapy money?
That and more. But first, May of 2025 is when the Risk 15th anniversary celebration is happening in Portugal. Come be with us for sightseeing, amazing meals, fun, low-pressure opportunities for story sharing, and so much more. Go to risk-show.com/Portugal for more information. I can't wait to meet you and vacation together with the best folks in the world, Risk fans. Again, that's risk-show.com/Portugal.
We'll be right back.
Folks, when my father was diagnosed with cancer in 2005, the prognosis at that time was that he might have about a year to live. Well, he beat that cancer, and we had 15 more wonderful, joyous years with my father. Years he got to spend with his grandchildren while they were growing up. We were so grateful for the support that we got from the medical community and all of that. Well, listen, the Leukemia and Lymphoma Society does such invaluable work. Blood cancer makes up 40% of pediatric and young adult cancers, including leukemia and lymphoma, and 80% of these survivors have lifelong side effects from their treatment. Young adults with blood cancer need support made just for them, to help them live better, live longer. LLS, the Leukemia and Lymphoma Society, offers free support, resources, and connection to peer survivors. If you or someone you know has been diagnosed with blood cancer, contact LLS online at lls.org/support-resources or by calling 800-955-4572 today. Now here's the show. Folks, this is Risk, the show where people tell true stories they never thought they'd dare to share. I'm Kevin Allison, and this is Jackie Davis behind me now. And we're calling this week's episode Phases, a circumstance where something was not just a phase, and a circumstance where something apparently was. In a little bit, we're going to hear from Brooklyn Jones, but before that, a story from Jamie Mulligan. Jamie shared this one at a recent Risk Live show in New York, and the next one of those is coming up on September 26th. Also, I'll have more to say about Jamie's story later in the episode. Jamie misspoke about something and wanted to clarify it, but that'll make more sense after you hear the story. So here is Jamie Mulligan now with a story we call Flexible.
What do we think of the dress? Do we like? Thank you. Thank you. 25-year-old me cannot believe I am standing here in a dress right now. Back then, there were two key parts to my identity, and number one was that I was a man. I know, it didn't sound right to me either. But I had short hair, I did physical labor for a living, and I did not make it a habit of showing up in public wearing a custom-tailored, silk-embroidered, fit-and-flare, three-quarter-sleeve boat-neck dress. Because I was a man, and that was my story, and I was clinging to it. I did have a plan for how I was going to tell my family and friends. They would be gathered in my home. I would give them a beautifully composed handwritten letter. They would each read it in turn, while I lay comfortably in my grave, having died of natural causes at an old age. That was my plan, and I thought it was a good one, because I firmly believed that if anyone ever saw me, they would not want me in their life. Part number two of my identity at the time was that I was a pretentious theater artist. But Jamie, you say, pretentious theater artist is redundant. You can just say theater artist. We'll get the rest. But I assure you, I was the snobbiest of the snobby. I told a theater producer once that I wouldn't work on his Rodgers and Hammerstein musical because it was too commercial and too conventional. I said that out loud to another human being with a straight face. So I'm living in San Francisco at the time, and one day I'm walking down Market Street, and about 50 yards down the sidewalk, I can see two teenagers looking at me. And they're sort of saying something to each other, and they're gesturing. And then they start making a beeline for me, and I'm like, what is going on? They run up to me, and one of them goes, excuse me, are you Brendan Fraser? Now, before anyone thinks I'm humble bragging about being mistaken for Brendan Fraser, remember, I'm a pretentious theater artist, and Brendan Fraser was not yet the whale of an actor he is today. At the time, Brendan Fraser was famous for things like Encino Man, George of the Jungle, The Mummy, not exactly works of cinematic genius. I thought Brendan Fraser was representative of all that was wrong with the arts in America. Too commercial, too conventional. I felt I had nothing in common with Brendan Fraser. I thought he was an inauthentic cipher that simply played the parts the world wanted him to play. So I told the kids no, and I walked away thinking, I don't want to be mistaken for a Hollywood leading man. I don't want to be a man. So I guess I did have something in common with Brendan Fraser. I didn't like Brendan Fraser, and I didn't like myself either. And that's when I realized I'm going to need a new plan, one that involved me being seen before I died. I know, it sounded crazy to me too. But how? I didn't even know how to get the words to come out of my mouth. I tried for 5 years. Lunches with friends, vacations with families, phone calls with siblings. I tried and I tried and I tried and I couldn't do it. I just couldn't get the words to come out of my mouth. The irony, of course, is that I'm living this life in San Francisco. Have you been to San Francisco? I even had amazing relationships with some wonderful women, but I always felt like I was lying to them. And so I ended those relationships prematurely. Just shy of my 30th birthday, I said, enough is enough. I have to do it. The next person I meet that I want to spend time with, I'm going to tell them right away. Better to rip the Band-Aid off and be rejected sooner rather than later. Sure enough, I met a wonderful woman, smart, talented, delightfully goofy. We went out, and I told her on our second date. I didn't tell her on our first date, I'm not a monster. And what I told her was a mess. I could barely explain it to myself, let alone anyone else. It was just a tidal wave of feelings about clothing and sex, and it was all over the place, and it was just the tip of the iceberg, but she saw me. And she still wanted me in her life. A couple years later, I asked her to marry me. She said yes. We are still married today. Thank you. Thank you. But that was just the beginning. I had a long way to go. It would be another 8 years before I wore what I wanted to wear in the light of day. It took a lot of therapy. Do you have any idea how many dresses I could have bought with 8 years of therapy money? So I had a lot more people to tell, but life got messy. We moved countries twice. We changed careers. We had kids. I worried for years what it would be like to tell the boys. Finally, I sat them down when they were 9 and 12, and I said, I think it is great that you're going to school now with kids that can identify however they want to, and they can use whatever pronouns they want to, and they don't have to feel shame about it. And that's amazing because it's so different from how I grew up. When I was growing up, I was made to feel ashamed of who I was on the inside, and I don't want you boys to ever feel that shame. And so I want to tell you now that I identify is gender fluid and non-binary. And I talked a little bit about what I thought that would mean for us going forward. And I got to the end, and my kids looked at me like I had just told them we were having leftovers for dinner. My oldest said, "Okay, can we eat now?" And I said, "But wait, don't you have any questions?" And my younger said, "Is what you just told us special?" I said, "Yes, I think it is, and I think we should celebrate these things." And he said, "But if it's a special night, can we have soda with dinner?" So then it was off to tell everybody else. But I didn't want to have the coming out conversation with 100 people and sitting there waiting for them to decide whether or not they'll accept me. I had a video, it was online, I sent them a link, and then I waited. And what came back was a tidal wave of love and support. And I've never felt so good in my entire life. A lot of people wanted to have the pronoun conversation. I was not one of them. Let me just say this. If after this show, you're talking to your friends and you say, "He was a terrible storyteller," I'm way more concerned with the end of that sentence than I am with the front. So, some people have asked if I've ever experienced any harassment. And I like to tell this anecdote. I was in a comedy open mic, and a young comic got on stage, and he singled me out in the audience, and he pointed at me and said, "How about this guy with the cock-sucking hair?" Yeah, record scratch moment, right? I shouted back, "Does my hair make you uncomfortable?" And we got into a little verbal tussle, but the room turned on him, and he could feel it, and he got frustrated, and he blurted out, "I bet you're a liberal, too." "Oh, you cracked that case, Sherlock." "Of course I'm a liberal. You've never seen a conservative with hair this cute." Where was I? Oh, right. Brendan Fraser. So a little while ago, Brendan Fraser was in a film called The Whale. I think we can all agree it was a solid step up from Encino Man. And in it, he played a morbidly obese man who's on the verge of death. He is eating to self-medicate, and he has basically given up on the idea of ever being seen. At one point, he says to his estranged daughter, "Look at me. Who would want me in their life?" And I suspect I'm not the only person who knows what that feels like. But I bet very few of us will ever know what it's like to be paid $12 million to feel that way. Of course, then I read some interviews with Brendan Fraser, and he talked about his struggles with mental health, and the difficulty of coming forward with his own story of being sexually assaulted, and the challenges of being a celebrity and a father, and what that means for his kids. And so, I guess I like Brendan Fraser now. I know, it doesn't sound right to me either. But if I can like Brendan Fraser, I suppose that means I can like myself too. Thank you.
Hi, I'm Willa Paskin, the host of Decoder Ring, Slate's podcast about cracking cultural mysteries. On Decoder Ring, we dive down rabbit holes and obsessively explore questions hiding in plain sight. Like, why has slow dancing gone out of style? And when did we all become obsessed with hydration? And where did the word mullet, you know, to describe a hairstyle, come from? That's Decoder Ring, named one of the best podcasts of 2023 by the New York Times. Listen to new episodes every 2 weeks and make sure to follow us so you never miss one.
It's not just about watching the game. It's about betting on it. I'm Mike Valeni, and on Cash the Ticket, Jim Costa and I break down every college football and NFL matchup like it's the last game we're ever going to watch, from the best bets to the sneaky underdogs. And of course, as my co-host likes to say, the value. And the one thing we're not going to do is pretend we're professionals. We have fun with it. It's an entertainment product, and it makes watching games a hell of a lot of fun. So Cash the Ticket, follow it in the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
We're back.
This is Risk. This is Tony Allen behind me now, and we just heard a Bowie cover by the Papini Sisters, and before that, Jamie Mulligan. Now, a word about Jamie's story. You know, sometimes a storyteller will word things a certain way, especially when they're trying to highlight one idea and feel the need to compress other information to fit the time slot they have for telling the story. Then that storyteller might realize, oh, you know, I painted an inaccurate picture. So in this case, listeners probably came away thinking that Jamie had a conversation with their wife on their second date about gender. But the truth is that that conversation was really just about sex. Jamie didn't really start to share that their interest in all things feminine was gender related until about 7 years into their marriage. So Jamie felt that it was important to clarify, and I get it. I've done things like that in stories before, too, and wish I could get some podcasts I've been on to run some clarifications. Folks, the coolest thing has happened. Inmates in several prisons around the country have been emailing me through this special platform. A fella named Byron wrote, "The podcasts that are on our tablets are selected by someone in the higher-ups, and I am so thankful that Risk is one they allowed us to have access to. You have quite the following behind these bars." He said, "Risk helped me through my darkest moments, and I'll never be able to express in words the gratitude I feel for what you do. Listening to Risk has given me a sense of acceptance that I never could have found anywhere else." Then another inmate named Chance wrote, "Your show has helped me with a lot of things I've dealt with for a long time and gave me courage to have conversations with my family about things they never knew before." An inmate named Eddie wrote, "Risk has brought me more inner peace and self-acceptance than 15 years of therapy ever could. Risk has made me do a lot of soul searching, and it has gotten me through multiple losses of friends and family, a 10-year-long relationship ending, moving unit to unit, getting multiple parole denials, and not being able to go home. Without Risk, I honestly cannot tell you where I'd be without it. I've been telling everyone about Risk. Every time a new episode comes on, you can definitely tell from the uncontrollable laughter you hear in the hallways or guys repeating your famous intro. It gives us all something to talk about. Some form of familiarity between the most unlikely of people. I get up every day and first thing I do is refresh my podcast and hope and pray there's something new. Yesterday, I listened to the episode Waves for the first time, and brother, The dildo song had us all talking. I saw people from down the hallway in the chow hall at lunch, and three of them stopped me asking if I'd listened to it yet, and all I could say was,
it's dildo, it's dildo, it's big, it's fleshy, it's ripped. It's dildo, it's dildo, yes, that's right, it's ripped.
Well, guys, I can't tell you how honored all of us here at Risk are to hear this. I was talking to a social worker last night who was so grateful to have left his Wall Street job behind. He said, nothing can compare to feeling like your work is helpful and meaningful to people. I feel the exact same way. So guys, hopefully one day we can figure out a way to record your stories from behind bars. We'll try to figure that out. You help us figure it out too. And to everyone else listening, this is it. This is all the more reason you might want to help keep Risk running if you can afford to join our Patreon at patreon.com/risk, or you can make a one-time donation at paypal.me/riskshow. Next up, we're going to hear from Brooklyn Jones, a stand-up comedian from Brooklyn, New York. But this was recorded at our last LA live show, the next of which is September 17th. Here's Brooklyn Jones now with a story we call, What Have You Done For Me Lately?
What's up, y'all? What's up, man? Y'all look good. Okay, no thanks or nothing. Okay, well, fuck it. Let me just tell my fucking story and get the fuck out of here. They're like, bitch, just tell the story. So I'm gonna tell you guys the story of how I met Janet Jackson in the chat room and we became friends, yeah. So back in the olden days, like the late 1900s, there was this thing called chat room. There was this thing called chat rooms, right? And you guys remember AIM, like AOL Instant Messenger? Okay, so I was a huge, huge, huge fan of Janet Jackson. Like when I was in my teens, I loved Janet. I didn't have any money, so I used to go to her concerts, but I used to sneak into them. So I would leave school early, like around, you know, lunchtime. I lived in New York, so I would go to Madison Square Garden, and that was like before 9/11, so security was a little more lax. And I would just walk into Madison Square Garden at the time that like the people that worked there were showing up. I just walk in and hide in the bathroom. And I'd be in the bathroom for hours. And I wait until they do sound check. And then when they do sound check, I come out and I watch the show. And I'd be like, hey, Janet. And then I bring friends. So sometimes I have my friend with me. And I'd be in one stall. She'd be in the other stall. We pass notes to each other under the stall until sound check. So anyway, I went to several Janet concerts. I used to sneak into the concert and then sneak to the front row because being there for free wasn't enough. I wanted to be right in the front. So I'd be up there, hi, Janet, you know? So she kind of knew my face or whatever. So then the internet started popping, right? She had her own fan club, but nobody really fucked with it because it was corny. But the fans created their own fan club and they created a website with a chat room. So all the cool fans used to chat in that chat room and Janet got wind of it. So she started coming in the chat room, chatting with all the fans. So we're like, oh shit, Janet's in here chatting with us. And she'd be like talking to us. And like so many fans got wind of it. It started to get kind of lame because like you could lurk and not interact. So people would just lurk and wait for Janet to come in. And then when she come in, everybody would just flood the chat. Now the chat's moving off fast. And we're like, man, what the fuck? Get the fuck out of here. So I got kind of popular in the chat because when I used to sneak into the concerts, I would also sneak backstage because being front row wasn't enough for me. I had to go backstage and meet the people. So I became like this famous little teenager for sneaking backstage at concerts. And I got to know like the band, the dancers, everyone knew me. So when I would sneak backstage, nobody would kick me out. They would know me by name and shit, right? So then, like, once the chat got popular and Janet started coming into the chat, the dancers would come into the chats too, and they realized who I was. So the fans realized the dancers knew me. So I kind of got kind of popular, like, oh, she knows all the dancers or whatever. Also, even before I became a comedian, I've always been a comedian, so I was kind of funny in the chat room. So I would make everybody laugh, and I was just, like, really silly. It used to irritate me because, like, a lot of us became friends in this chat room. Like, us fans, we became friends, so we would be happy to see each other and talk to each other. And then when Janet would come in, she would ruin it. Because now everybody, like, they flooded the chat room. Now I can't talk to my friends. I'm like, I don't see where they are. Janet's in here just ruining the fucking chat room. So sometimes, like, when she would come in, we're like, oh, here this bitch comes. So, like, me and my friends would have, like, side conversations. Everybody's like, Janet, I love you. Janet, can you call me? Here's my number. Like, everybody's, like, obsessing over Janet. And I'm like, man, fuck Janet. I don't talk to my friends. So I'm, like, talking to my friends. And me and my friends are having, like, these amazing side conversations. Janet notices our side conversations. She's, like, over the people who are obsessing over her. She's like, I want to get in on the conversation. So being the silly person that I am, one time Janet tried to interject herself into our conversation. And I told her to mind her business. Joking, but I said, Janet, mind your business, LOL. So I think that was like the beginning of it, because she's like, this girl is crazy. Like, all these people are trying to talk to me, and the one person I try to talk to tells me to mind my business. So I'm like, you know, still friends with the dancers or whatever. I have AOL Instant Messenger, so we start IMing each other on IM. So I'm like, cool with all these dancers, and everybody's like, oh, she's so funny. And Janet becomes like the odd one out, so to speak, because I'm friends with like all these dancers and I'm like making everybody laugh and shit, and she's like the only one not talking to me. So she's like, well, I want to talk to her too, I guess, you know. So she IMs me one day. I didn't know it was her. She IMed me from some like fake name. So I'm like, who is this? She didn't tell me at first. So we're like having this whole conversation. I'm just talking to this rando. And then she's like, okay, well, I gotta go now. And I'm like, wait, you didn't tell me who this was. And she's like, oh, this is Janet. This is Dunk. That was her nickname. This is Dunk. And I'm like, yeah, right. This is not Janet. Fuck out of here, right? So then she leaves, and I instant message one of the dancers that I was cool with. And I was like, this person just IM'd me, and they said it was Janet. Was it really her? And she's like, yeah, that actually was Janet. And I'm like, oh, shit. I was talking to Janet on Instant Messenger. So now, like, whenever she signs on, I'm like, what up, Janet? Like, we're talking now. So now we're, like, having these conversations, talking for hours. I'm like, damn, Janet ain't got shit to do. Like, she's just like us. Like, this bitch ain't got nothing to do. Like, why are you talking to me for so many hours? Like, don't you have a song to sing or something? Like, what are you doing? I remember one time, it was like a Saturday. That's like the day everybody has a life. Except me, obviously, and Janet, because I was in there like all day on Saturday. She talked to me the entire fucking day. She was shooting that Nutty Professor movie. So, you know, like when you're on a movie set, it's a lot of hurry up and wait. So she'd be in the dressing room or in her trailer with nothing to do. So I was like keeping her entertained the whole time. She came to New York once. I was living in New York, and she IM'd me, and she's like, hey, what are you doing today? And I'm like, I don't know, nothing. She's like, want to hang out? And I'm like, holy shit, hell yeah, I want to hang out. So she's like, meet me here. She gives me this address, and I go and hang out with her, and we go to a club. This is my first nightclub experience. And I was like, oh shit, like this is my first nightclub experience, and I'm with fucking Janet Jackson. And let me tell you something, nightclubs is not the same when you were Janet Jackson, because I was young and dumb. I didn't know what nightclub clothes are supposed to be. I was at the club with jeans and sneakers on, child. You can't even get into the club with jeans and sneakers. And I was in there just like hanging out with my jeans and sneakers. I went to the bathroom, and this lady was like, how'd you get in here with that on? I'm like, bitch, mind your business. Like, you wouldn't understand. So I'm like at the club with Janet Jackson, and we had like a booth. And there was a table, so it was like me, her, and the dancer that I knew, and like one of their other friends, and we were like all just like hanging out, and there was like a table there, and everybody, like the people in the club got wind that Janet was there, so everybody's like easing their way over to like Janet's table, because I guess they wanted to audition or something, because everybody's like dancing in front of her table and shit, like Janet's gonna see me dance, and Janet like hated it, because she likes to people watch, you know, so she wanted to just like watch everybody and be chill, but all these people were like, this is a table, and they're like dancing right in front of the table, like she couldn't see anything, so she would throw peanuts at them. So she's like taking peanuts and just like pelting people with the peanuts, and then when they turn around, she just look away, and my stupid ass is looking dead at them. So now it's looking like I'm throwing the peanuts at them, and they're like, Like, and I'm like, no, it's her throwing the peanuts. And nobody's believing that Janet's throwing peanuts at them. So it was so weird because, like, the way people would try to get near her, there was no shame. Like, there was one time we were out because, like, we started hanging out. But we hung out one time at this club. We're sitting down, and people stare at her all the time, and it makes her really uncomfortable. So whenever there's, like, lights or candles, she blows them all out so that it's dark. But at this point, everybody already knew she was there. So this guy decides that he's going to come and try to meet Janet. But we were sitting in a booth, and there was a table. It was a low table, like a coffee table. This man got on the floor and crawled under the table to try to get to Janet. And I'm just wondering, and I'm like a terrible friend because I'm like sitting next to her. I should be trying to protect her, like telling her security, like, yo, there's a dude climbing under the table. But I really wanted to see what he's going to do once he got to the other side. I was like, I really want to see the outcome of this. Because, like, what do you do when you crawl under a table and come out on the other side? Like, what you going to say? Surprise! Like, hi! Like, I just wanted to see. But he got caught before he could make it to the other side. It was, like, a really interesting friendship because I was broke as hell. I don't know why Janet was hanging out with me. Like, why would she want to hang out with a broke chick? I had just started college. I didn't have shit. I remember one time Janet invited me to hang out with her, and I had to ask my aunt for $5. To get on the train to get to her. And I was like, Auntie, can I borrow $5? And she's like, where are you going? And I said, I'm going to hang out with Janet Jackson. And she's like, you going to hang out with Janet Jackson and you don't have $5? And I'm like, Auntie, are you gonna give me the $5 or not? Like, just give me the $5. Like, Janet said, once I get there, she got me. Like, she pays for, like, all the shit once I get there. And she's like, what if you go out with Janet one day and y'all go out to dinner and she's like, oops, I forgot my wallet. And I'm like, well, I guess me and Janet gonna be washing dishes. Like, she know I don't have no money. And Janet, like, she's Janet. So we're not going to regular restaurants. We're going to Nobu and shit. You know, she know I don't have Nobu money. I remember I had an internship and my boss at the internship asked me what I was doing over the weekend, and I was like, oh, I'm going to Nobu with some friends. And she's like, you're going to Nobu? You can't go to Nobu. There's like a 3-month waiting list. And I'm like, well, maybe it is for you. But I'm going to Nobu on Saturday, bitch. Janet gave me my first sushi experience. I'm fancy. My first sushi experience was at Nobu. So she ordered some sashimi, and even though, like, me and Janet were cool and I was hanging out with her, I was still a fan deep down inside. So whenever I had to hang out with her, I'd be a little bit nervous. So I was, like, nervous as fuck, and I have a nervous stomach. So if, like, I'm really nervous, I'll throw up, right? And I didn't know we were going out to eat this day because we were supposed to be going to a party, right? So she's like, you want to go to a party? I'm like, yeah. So me and another friend of ours, we were like, well, let's go get something to eat before we go because we're not going to dinner. So we went to Popeyes, and I, like, filled up on Popeyes chicken and biscuits. I was, like, stuffed. And then somebody got stabbed at the party, so Janet called us. Yeah, it was back in the day, like, the hip-hop days. I think Jay-Z had stabbed some dude named Undies. Look it up. That really happened. But, Janet's like, they stabbing motherfuckers at the party, so we're not going to the party. We'll go out to dinner instead. And I was like, fuck, we're going to dinner already 8. So we go to Nobu, and she brings out all this sushi and shit. I never had raw fish before, and I had just ate, like, 10 Popeyes chicken wings and biscuits, so my stomach was stuffed. I was also nervous. And now she's like, here, I want you to try this. So she's, like, stuffing my face with sashimi, and I'm like, this shit is disgusting. Like, I don't know what to do. Like, I'm trying to be polite and eating it. And all of a sudden, I was like, uh-oh. And I was, like washing everything down with water. And all of a sudden, I was like, holy fucking shit, I think I'm going to throw up. I didn't want to throw up at the table. So I was like, I'll be right back. And I got up, like, casually, and I walked away. But I didn't make it all the way to the bathroom, and I puked down the steps of Nobu. It was so embarrassing, but I was like, shit, Dana's all the way over there. They're not going to know. So I just go in the bathroom. When I get to the bathroom, I wasn't done. I puked all over the bathroom. Like, it looked like a nightmare. It looked like fucking Exorcist was in there. And I was like, holy shit. I just threw up all over the bathroom. I don't know what to do. So I'm, like, freaking out. Luckily, it was, like, a single bathroom. So I'm, like, grabbing paper towels. I'm, like, trying to clean up before anybody finds out. And all of a sudden, there's a knock at the door. I'm like, fuck. Who is he? And she's like, it's Janet. Are you okay? The waitress said that you're sick. I was like, why would she tell? Oh, my God. That was so embarrassing. And Janet's an asshole, so she made fun of me the rest of the night. And she teased me for weeks after that. A lot of people don't know this about Janet, but Janet is hilarious. Like, she has a wonderful sense of humor. If you ever get to play the dozens with Janet, don't do it because she will hurt your feelings. You will never win a dozens battle with Janet. Like, she is very witty. So we used to like roast each other. I mean, like, I thought I was holding my own, but Janet used to get the best of me every time. But really, what can you say about Janet Jackson? Like, there's not a whole lot you can say. You know what I mean? Like, I remember one time I told her some shit like, this was when like her album, she didn't have any music out or anything. And I was like, talk to me when you get famous and draw your mole back on, bitch. Like, that's the best I had. And she was just like roasting the fuck out of me. So like, all you can really say is like a couple of plastic surgery jokes. And you're done. Like, that's all you can say about her. And even with the plastic surgery, she's fucking gorgeous. So like, what can you say about Janet Jackson? She just be roasting the fuck out of me. And I'm like, this kind of hurts. I don't think I want to do this anymore. I went to LA for the first time. And I had a friend who was getting married. And Janet found out that I was going to be in LA. So she's like, oh shit, you're coming to LA? Why don't you come hang out with me? I'll take you around. So the day after the wedding, I was staying in a cheap ass motel. Janet's like, give me the address. I'm thinking she's gonna like send a car for me. Janet pulls up to the motel. She comes to get me from the motel. I get in the car. It's just me, Janet, and the dancer that we both knew. Just the three of us. No security, no nothing. Like in New York, it was always security. But out here, it was just the three of us. It was crazy. Like she was driving. I'm like, Janet Jackson was my chauffeur. How many people can say that Janet Jackson was their chauffeur? This bitch came and got me and she drove me all around. She's like, where do you wanna go? I'm like, I don't fucking know. Like, I'm where I want to be. Like, I'm hanging out with Janet Jackson. I don't give a shit where we go. So she's like driving me all around LA, just like showing me LA. This is my first time here. And she's a fool. So she was telling me all these lies and I was believing all of them. So it was like raining, right? And you know the mountains, how like the hills, when it rains, it's like kind of mudslidey and it was like hot. So when it rained, there was like smoke coming out of the mud. She told me that was an Indian burial ground. And the smoke coming out of the mud was their spirits. And my stupid ass was believing it. I was like, oh, shit, I see it. Like, Jen is hilarious. So she just drove me all over the city. We hung out the whole day. We went to breakfast. And then there was one time we were like, she wanted to go shopping because we were supposed to go to a party, the rap party or something for the Nutty Professor. So she's like, oh, I got to go get a jacket. So we went to like this super expensive fucking store. This bitch, she don't look at price tags or nothing. She was like, I'm going to get this jacket. I'm going to get this. And my broke ass was like, well, aren't you going to check the price? And I checked the price. It was like $8,000. She was like, oh my God, you're so cute. Like, it's cute to check price tags. It was crazy. So there was at one point, the girl that was with us, she got hungry. She's like, oh shit, there's a Taco Bell. Let's just pull into the Taco Bell. I want to get a taco or a burrito real quick, right? Janet drives through the Taco Bell drive-thru. She's like, hi, I'd like a burrito or whatever. You know how she talks. So she orders the burrito. The girl gives her the money, right? And I knew it was going to be some shit because I'm like, this is fucking Janet Jackson. She's about to pull up to the drive-thru window. The guy's going to notice. He's going to recognize her. So I like lean in so I can see. So she pulls up to the window and she's like, hi. And he sees her and he just froze. And he's just standing there, like his hands are shaking and he's just staring at her. And she's like, I ordered the burrito. And he's like, here, he hands her the burrito and he hands her her change and we leave. And as we're driving, she realized she still had the money. So she's like, wait, how did I get the burrito and I still have the money? And how did he give me change? Like, how did he know how much change to give me back? Because I didn't give him any money. I'm like, girl, I have no fucking clue. So yeah, Janet gets free burritos at Taco Bell and she gets free money. It's awesome to be rich. It was like the craziest thing. I've never seen anything like it. It was so much fun. I got to go to her house because we had to go to her house to change clothes. And I was still young and dumb, so I didn't know what to wear to a party. I had on like a puffer vest. Just looking stupid as hell. And we went to her house, and her house was like really nice. She had like a pool. She had a fucking salon in her house. It was like three chairs, and she had like pictures up of herself. And then there was this one room that was full of all the shit from her tour. And I recognized it because, you know, I snuck into all her fucking concerts. I'm like, oh shit, those are the boots that she wore on the Janet Period tour. It was just like so cool. Her house was like, it was weird because it was like somebody's house, but it was also where people work. So there was a time clock in there, like for the people to punch their time so she could like calculate it and pay them. I'm like, this bitch got a fucking time clock in her house. It was crazy. And then she had like surveillance cameras everywhere. Like, I was in the kitchen, and there were, like, six TVs, and it was just, like, showing the perimeter of the house. And then she had all these ugly-ass dolls, like, these African dolls, and they were all, like, staring at me. And then she was like, I'll be back. I'm going to get dressed. And then she went upstairs to get dressed, her and the other girl, and left me down there for, like, an hour with those ugly-ass dolls. And I kind of think they, like, left me there to see what I was going to do. You know, she's like, let's see if she's going to snoop in our stuff or steal something or I don't know. But I just sat in one spot. I was like, I'm not touching anything. Like, this is a rich person's house. I'm not touching anything. And I just sat there until I fell asleep. I fell asleep at her house. I was graduating from college in New York. I went to Parsons School of Design. And when I graduated, her birthday party was the day before my graduation. So me and her got so close that she literally asked me, I feel like you're going to be tired at your graduation. So do you think I should move my party to another day so you won't be tired? So you won't be tired at the graduation? And I'm like, she's going to move her whole fucking party just for me? And I'm like, girl, no, I'll just sleep at the graduation. Like, what are you talking about? I slept through my whole graduation. I was like, wake me up when they call my name. So I don't even know what happened at the graduation. But that party was amazing. We went to Nobu again. They're like, here come Pukey. And it was so cool because, like, she rented out the whole Nobu for her birthday. And it were, like, two long tables. And I got to sit at her table. I was like, oh, shit. Like, I get to sit at the table with Jenna. Like, I'm that important. And it was some, like, famous people there. Like, Missy Elliott was there. MC Light was there. Redman was there. And this is a crazy thing. Like, when I was doing instant message with Janet, she would get me to teach her friends how to use Instant Messenger. So I taught Missy Elliott how to use Instant Messenger. I also taught Johnny Gill how to use Instant Messenger. So you're welcome. But yeah, that party was so amazing. And like my graduation was the next day and she gifted me my first MacBook at her birthday party. So she bought me a gift on her birthday. And I thought that was really amazing. And Janet was a really, really cool friend till she wasn't. because she ghosted me. Like, I don't know why. Like, I never got the conversation as to why she ghosted me. Like, one day we were like the best of friends and she's like, I love you so much. You're such a great person. And then one day she ghosted me and never spoke to me again. So I was like, what the fuck? And it hurt a lot. Like, it took me a long, long, long time to get over it. But it made me a stronger person because, like, people would be like, I'm not your friend no more. And I'm like, I don't give a fuck. Janet Jackson ain't my friend no more. And I'm still alive, bitch. Like, I don't care. Like, nobody can hurt my feelings by, like, ghosting me and not being my friend anymore. Because I'm like, bitch, Janet Jackson ghosted me. Like, who the fuck are you? So in retrospect, she really helped me not give a fuck. And I think that was pretty amazing. So thank you, Janet. And I don't know why she decided to befriend just like some broke chick from Brooklyn. I don't know if she was like bored and just wanted to see what it felt like to hang out with broke people or if she was like researching a movie or something. But I'm grateful that she chose me for her case study because nobody can say that they met Janet Jackson in the chat room and became friends with her. So yeah, that's my story. Thank you.
This is Risk. This is Janet Jackson behind me now. And we just heard from Brooklyn Jones, who you can find on Instagram at It's Brooklyn Jones. Folks, guess what's coming? The Best of Risk number 31. And who decides what goes on it? You do. Go to risk-show.com, click on Special Series, then click on The Best of Risk. There you can vote on your favorite stories of the past 6 months. There's super short little synopses of the stories to remind you what's what. And you click on your favorites before noon on September 18th. Folks, don't forget that Risk is live in LA on September 17th and in New York on September 26th. And for the New York show, you could get a chance to share a 5-minute story on stage on the theme Treacherous. You know, we're taking some audience stories as well, just 5 minutes long. And you can always find out when our live shows or our social events are happening at risk-show.com/live. Folks, tomorrow, Wednesday, we have the wonderful Robin Gelfenbein with a very unique sort of story about the late, great Colleen Hinsley. And in honor of that, we're also re-releasing Colleen Hinsley's Risk story. It's a classic called The Voice at the very same time. So 2 episodes tomorrow, Wednesday. But that's Wednesday. And folks, today's the day. Take a risk. At the end of this one, huh? We used to call my nephew Lily. Sometimes. We still do.